The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. Century of Lies is a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network, on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. Well, folks, it's August. We're just a few weeks away from the 25th anniversary Seattle Hemp Fest. That'll be August 19th, 20th, and 21st. I love going to Hemp Fest. It really is the largest marijuana protestival in the United States. It's 3 days of music, politics, and cannabis. The music stages have great crowds, really supportive and enthusiastic, great fun. Though my favorite stage is the Rick Smith Hemposium. That's located in a tent at the south end of the venue. It's where they have keynote speakers and panel discussions. With the Hemposium stage, HempFest becomes like a conference that just happens to have a music festival going on out back in conjunction. This year, I'm scheduled to speak at a Hemposium panel on cannabis and the news media. Last year, I spoke on a panel that was about the future of legalization, whether medical, adult social, and spiritual uses can coexist, and how they can coexist. Spoiler alert, they can, and they must. The panel last year featured Keith Straup, Carrie Boyder, the New Jersey weed man Ed Fortian, Gloria Caltech, and Vivian McPeak, alongside yours truly. I recorded the audio, but for some reason never used it on the show. Well, until today, that is. The next voice you hear will be that of panel moderator Don E. Wertschafter. He'll introduce the panelists for our opening remarks.
Let's let each speaker introduce themselves and what they're doing about cannabis reform. And let's start with Doug there on that end and work our way across.
Good morning. Good morning. I am Doug McVeigh, as he said. I do a bunch of stuff, freelance journalism. I'm a reporter for KBOO Radio in Portland. And I am also the host of a show called Century of Lies. Comes out every week. Newest is going online today. Oh my gosh. I'm also the editor and compiler of a resource called Drug War Facts at drugwarfacts.org. Every bit of information you could want. And I'll present it in a kind of plain vanilla way. We don't have pot leaf graphics. I don't have weed ads. I don't have bud babes. Sorry. I don't have any music. And that's because I want a website that your kids and your grandkids can go to in their middle school, and the school librarian will look at it and bookmark it because it's such a great resource. I want something you can send your grandparents to and they can have their church prayer circle look at because they're interested in getting this information and they know that when they get all these people going boo and scaring them and it doesn't work. That's sort of what I do. My purpose in life is to learn and to then communicate what I learned to other people. You folks are the ones who have to make people care. Well, you already care. You figured that out. What you need to do is communicate your passion. And the spiritual use for me has been the passion. I found that I've become a better person, concerned about things and people and stuff like that after I started smoking weed. And the more I got into my marijuana activism, the more I realized it's not really about pot. Like I say, you did a great job out here legalizing weed. Good start. There's a long way to go, and God, do you have a lot of work left.
Yeah.
I think that's enough of an introduction, isn't it?
Close.
I'm Gloria Caltech. I am a co-founder of the Continuum Fellowship of Universal Understanding. We are a group that meets on a regular basis, mainly made up of local activists of varying religious backgrounds who share in the spiritual communion of cannabis, and as well as the changes that we're working to create. Some of us have different viewpoints. I have friends that are on the that are medical users. I have friends that are recreational users. I know people who use for other purposes. And I kind of come from the perspective that if your body is not well, your spirit is not well. So medical use serves the spirit. And part of the purpose of spirit is to have a good time in our life and to be able to share in the joy of being alive. And recreational allows us to do that. So for me, it doesn't matter whether you're using it for recreational or for medicine or strictly because it's a religious thing. They're all good for the spirit and for what makes life good. And that's kind of what we teach and what we practice, and we do other community outreach. We have a garden, we share food, we do a lot of other things that are supportive of the spirit beyond cannabis.
Keith?
I'm Keith Strop. I'm legal counsel at Normal, and Normal has always been a consumer lobby. It grew out of some work I had initially done with Ralph Nader. But the consumer in this instance is the marijuana smoker. So we've always tried to represent the interests of marijuana smokers regardless of why they're smoking. It seems irrelevant to me as to why you smoke. The government has no business knowing whether we smoke or why we smoke. Now, interestingly, I spend a lot of my work in writing and speaking focusing on the fact that I think it's only incidentally about marijuana anyway. I think it's about personal freedom. And I do indeed believe that that's a universal concept that you can connect with people, many of whom do not smoke marijuana. I think the reason we're winning this issue nationwide right now is because the majority of the non-smokers, of the 86% who don't smoke, nonetheless have recognized that prohibition is a failed public policy, that it destroys the lives needlessly of hundreds of thousands of good, productive citizens. So they're anti-prohibition. They're not pro-pot, but that's all right. It means they vote our way. So I think most of these reasons that we smoke may disappear in the bigger picture. Now, I will say this, that I had a case in my own life where I began to have seizures when I was 65 years old, and I didn't even know what a seizure was or an epileptic was. Well, I am an epileptic. It's anyone who's had more than two seizures. My seizures are under control, but I can't help but tell you when I first experienced the first seizure, and it was very frightening not being familiar with it, I called my good friend Lester Grinspoon at Harvard, who I thought, man, he knows everything. So, Lester, what the hell's going on? I'm a 65-year-old man, and I just had a seizure. And he said, Keith, you probably would have had seizures most of your adult life, except you've been taking the best anti-seizure medication for all those years. And he's right. I've been smoking for 50 years. So even without intending it as medical use, I suspect that it probably was keeping me from having seizures before they finally broke through. As you get a certain age, your neurons quit firing right, and seizures are more common. Now, there's one other thing, too, I think is worth mentioning. I talk about this occasionally publicly, but I think one has to be careful. I think marijuana is more than just okay, and I think it's more than just fun to get me high. When I have to do any serious writing or thinking, if I'm trying to work on a speech and nothing's coming to my mind that seems worthwhile, I lock myself in my home office and get just stoned as I can in front of my computer, and I write down every thought I have. And the next morning, I look at them, and some of them I laugh at. I mean, it's stoner stupid stuff that I should have recognized. But almost every time, there's one or two insightful thoughts I have that help me analyze an issue, and I'm surprised I wasn't able to come up with those when I was straight, but I wasn't. And so for me, and I think for a lot of people who use marijuana, part of the benefit is that it opens your mind up, it expands your mind. It's a little of the Andy Weil theory of life. Sometimes experiencing expanded consciousness allows you to look at your life and your work and your family in a little better perspective. So. Mostly I like getting high, but I think it also has a lot of other helpful aspects.
Hello, my name is Vivian McPeak. I'm the executive director of Seattle Hemp Fest. I'm really honored to be at this table with all these absolutely wonderful people that I love and care for very much. I'm very proud to be here. I've been smoking pot only for 40 years, Keith. I'm embarrassed. I'm kind of a newcomer. You know, I just started recently. And I'm also, you know, I'm also like what Stephen Gaskin used to call a traditional American hippie. And still proud of it. I'm still a hippie, believe it or not. To me, it was about a state of mind and a lifestyle and a belief system rather than a time period or a fad or something like that. And to me, cannabis is a method, a upaya, a vehicle for introspection, for connection to the natural world, for reflection, for centering and grounding. I believe that cannabis prohibition is just a symptom of much greater and systemic war against the natural world that's global. On every level, when it comes to our food, when it comes to our medicine, when it comes to our energy, when it comes to our environment, when it comes to our marketing, our lifestyle, our packaging, you name it, synthetics. There's a war against the natural world, and it's a war that if we win, we lose. You know, at the very least, it's a feeling that we have to compete with the natural world. At the worst, it's this feeling that we need to defeat the natural world, which is defeating ourselves, because we're a part of that. And I believe that religion, just like cannabis use, just like the war to legalize cannabis and repeal prohibition, it's really about freedom of choice. You know, the reason we do hemp fest isn't because we think that pot's for everybody or that everybody should do pot. We think that everybody should have the choice, the right. Every adult should have the right and the freedom to make that choice for themselves, just like they should be able to choose their medicine and their medical treatment and what food they want to eat, and whether it's GMO or not, or whether it's organic or not. And they should be able to also choose what religion. You know, this country is supposedly founded, literally founded, upon a belief of religious freedom. And so we need to walk our talk. If we really mean, if that means anything at all, then Americans should have the right to use cannabis if that's the way that they worship, or the way they connect, or the way that they project, or get grounded and centered with the spirituality of themselves. I do apologize. My stage, my first speaker starts at 11:35. So I dare say I'm gonna have to bug out a little early, and I apologize for that.
And my name is Edward Fortune, publicly known as the New Jersey Weed Man. The question here is medical, recreational, spiritual use. Can they coexist? Yes, they can coexist. They exist because I know I exist. I belong to all three fronts here. On the recreational side, which I prefer to call social, I've been smoking a little less than these guys. I think I'm around 35 years, though. I started at 15, and I'm 51 now. So I'm right up there with you, though. Medical, I got diagnosed in 2000 with a form of bone cancer. I've had a couple different procedures to take tumors out. Some of them just exist and don't bother me. Other ones exist, and they're extremely painful. Most people with my condition are hooked on some type of painkillers, Percocets or, you know, oxycodones or something. And I'll admit I've used them, but I think the reason why I'm not hooked on any of those things is because I smoke as much marijuana as I do. You know, I even tell, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, even if I get a headache, I'm not gonna pop a Tylenol, I'm gonna twist one up and smoke it all. On the religious side, same thing. I was brought up a Baptist. You know, I think like most black people, we're brought up in a church setting. I went to church quite a bit when I was a kid with my mom, with my grandma. It seemed like with every family member in the world. And at some point when I was a teenager, I kind of rejected it. I think for years I called myself an agnostic only because I was too afraid to say I was an atheist. At some point, I even did call myself an atheist. And then sometime in my 30s, I started getting into Rastafari. And I think the reason why I even paid attention to that religion was because of the marijuana use. For years, I called myself a Rastafarian. At this point, I'm just a spiritual person. I'm not following anybody's particular religion. But I do believe marijuana is spiritual. It was put here by a higher power. People who use it and people who use it religiously, I always think are good people. I don't think I ever ran into a spiritual pot user who I also thought was an evil person. You know. So to answer the question, can they exist? Yes, they can exist. Anyway.
Hi, everyone. I'm Carrie Boyder, and I am an advocate for criminal justice reform in a broad sense. And I say that because one in three of us, including myself, is a criminal and has been through the criminal justice system. Most of us because of drugs. And it shouldn't be that way. The criminal justice system was made for violent offenders who harm people, for people in society who just can't take part without threatening others. And I certainly don't feel like I fall into that category. And that's why I have become an advocate for broader criminal justice reform. But I'm also a medical marijuana patient. I have a genetic condition that I was born with. It's nothing I did. It's not my fault. But it affects every system in my body. I have a lot of chronic pain. I have a lot of nausea, and I deal with vomiting. I lost actually 60 pounds from a lot of the stress that I've gone through in the last couple of years, and I couldn't stop losing weight. And cannabis helped me kind of keep it at bay a little bit. And so I certainly am a medical user, but I also am an advocate for recreational use. I worked in the state legislature on the legislative proposal that ended up becoming 502. And I had to make some really difficult decisions for me based on my own personal principles that were not easy. And even though I had worked pretty hard on that policy, I ended up choosing to oppose the initiative at the ballot because of some criminalization of users that were happening in that initiative. However, it has changed the paradigm. There are less arrests in Washington. People can drive around and not worry about being stopped in a traffic stop and being searched simply because of the smell of marijuana. Now, they do have to worry about, you know, being accused of driving impaired when they aren't impaired, but the actual use of marijuana and smelling it is no longer a cause to pull people over and search their vehicles. So that's a huge, huge paradigm shift, and we can't deny that just because it wasn't necessarily the popular choice for everybody. And certainly spiritual use, I've been enlightened in ways that I can't even begin to sum up in this movement, not only because of the cannabis use, but because of the people that I've met that use cannabis, and they've been enlightened by it. So I think the spiritual use is undeniable, and I do feel all three can coexist, and I feel that on all three levels, we have a lot more work to do. And so that means we need to figure out a way for us all to coexist and kind of, you know, work together some more, because we haven't won. It may be legal in Washington, but people are still going to prison. People are dying in prison in this state. And so that means we need to continue to figure out a way to move forward together, because we aren't going to win if we're fragmented into three separate categories, when we all know in our own lives we've used this in all three ways.
That's from a panel at Seattle HempFest's Hempodium stage, featuring myself, Keith Strop, Carrie Boyder, Ed Fortune, Gloria Caltech, and Vivian McPeak. It was moderated by Don Wordshafter. We'll have more from that in just a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies, a production of the Drug Truth Network, on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. This year marks the 25th anniversary of Seattle HempFest, the world's largest marijuana protestival. It'll be held in parks along the Seattle waterfront on August 19th, 20th, and 21st. Marijuana, cannabis, hemp, whatever word you use, the plant is the main focus. Yet many of us will also be talking about broader issues, like harm reduction, access to treatment, decriminalization of all drugs, and much more. On the show today, we're listening to portions of a panel discussion from last year's HempFest on whether and how the medical, adult social use, and spiritual uses of cannabis can coexist. The big question for everyone was how the rollout of adult social use was going to impact the medical program in Washington patients. That's the big concern in my home state of Oregon, and in every state that has medical and is considering legalizing adult social use of marijuana. The audio you're about to hear is from last year, yet in this election year, it's even more timely, as more states consider legalizing some form of adult social use. So let's get back to it. Don Wordshafter, the moderator, asks the big question about how medical and adult social use will coexist.
So 2 years ago, we had our debate here about I-502. Keith, Carrie, we're on opposite sides of that debate. The premise at the time was that I-502 would not affect the medical program that the voters of Washington initiated 15 years ago. Kari and others said, it will. and in retrospect, it seems right. Right? From our perspective, medical use in Washington has been totally run over in the implementation of I-502. What's normal going to do about that? What can we do about this?
Well, I think the first distinction has to be made, and I know it's easy, a lot of people confuse this, but what happened is you lost control of your state legislature. In other words, when all of the people were voting, there was nothing in I-502 that limited medical use, as you know. But there is some pressure, and it's not just here. Colorado's dealing with it, and I think other states will be soon, too. There are a lot of experts who will say you can't maintain two separate markets. At some point, it may be one market where you simply don't have sales tax, for example, for patients, or you've got to recognize that they can't all afford to pay the same high price that consumers pay. But I don't think the drive to unify the markets is mistaken. I think that will happen over time, period. But we've got to be sensitive that we don't leave needy patients out. Now, I will have to say this. When I sometimes hear this argument made, it was we used to be able to have 28 plants or something, and now we can't have more than 8 plants.
Guys, and we can't get a recommendation for those 8 plants.
24 to 6. Oh, 24 to how many?
6, I believe.
You know, I guess we're not quite sure what the minimum
is.
But I think it's 8, but I may be wrong. But what I'm saying is, before you start making the case that patients are dying in Washington because they can only grow 8 plants, I don't think that's happening, okay? I think we've got to be sensitive.
Well, we're being busted. We're going through the criminal justice system.
Not if you are following the terms of the law. It's just that the terms of the law have changed now, you know, because of the legislature. But I'm saying I don't think you can fairly blame that on those who were wise enough to stop arresting smokers. What you can do is you can work to go back and improve it. And I'm all for that. I think, in fact, there are major efforts underway. You had personal cultivation in this latest amendment up until some jackass in your legislature took it out. So, I think it's possible to correct the problems with I-502, but I don't think you should blame the voters that approved the end of arresting marijuana smokers for the fact that you've had problems in medical use.
Viv?
Yeah, I apologize. I'm going to have to leave pretty soon because I got to introduce some folks and I don't have anybody covered for me. I voted against I-502 because of the DUI provision. However, I was glad it passed without my vote. I was glad it passed. In the long run, I think in the bigger picture nationally, it was more important. If Colorado would have passed and Washington had it, oh, it's an aberration, those crazy Oregonians. And I think it's been a tipping point, a critical mass to end this critical mess that we've had the 4 states pass. But I think even though the state legislature does look at, some of the state legislature looks at marijuana as OxyContin, cannabis, I think there's something deeper really wrong, and that was that we have all of these medical dispensaries in Washington State that had supply chains, they did huge investments of money, of capital to get established, they had supply chains, they had customer bases, they had point of sale systems, they knew the in and outs of the industry, they already were taking in money and selling cannabis, and instead of allowing them to transition into stores that could also serve the general public, we created an entirely new separate, let's create a new wheel, and we didn't even do it on a merit-based system, we did it on a lottery system. Whoever wins the lottery gets to open a recreational store. And I think that was a huge mistake that hasn't been replicated in some of the other states. I think they did it a lot better than we did. I think that you could have 15 ounces and 24 plants, if I remember correctly. Am I right, Allison? Previously, and now you can have, I think, 3 ounces and 6 plants?
Yeah.
I think is what it is?
Yeah, you can only have 6 if you put your name on a federal
register. All right, 4 plants if you don't go sign to a registry, which we all know that there's a huge data breach where millions of people's SSI numbers from the government were harvested, millions from China. So if you think that we can keep that registry out of the hands of the federal government, I think that's naive. So I think you have to be a master gardener to grow 4 plants and create a month's supply of cannabis. A master gardener. I think most patients are sick, they're broke, they don't know what they're doing. They can't produce for themselves. And I think that it's terrible what's going on in Washington State, but I think it's complicated stuff. You know, Reuben Carlisle, who was the sponsor of Senate Bill 2136, which just made it a Class C felony so that we couldn't have our adult use areas here at Hemp Fest this year like we had last year that were sealed off from children, which I thought was a model for the future because there could be an adult use area in every event, every public event in Washington State, maybe all over the country eventually if we made those work, which is why we cooperated with the city. And of course, 15 days before Hemp Fest, the city said, you know those use areas we made you do that you spent thousands of dollars on? And you bought $8,000 worth of fryer retardant that we made you put on them? Well, you can't do those this year. 15 days before the event, we had sponsors lined up. It was a nightmare. Anyway, Reuben Carlisle didn't want that in his bill. Senator Gene Co-Wells voted for it and didn't even know it was in there. Pete Holmes, our city attorney, is furious about that because he wants pot clubs. So it's a sausage factory in the legislature. It's very complicated stuff. And, you know, the guy that made that happen so that the bill could even pass at all is a right-wing Democrat who still looks at cannabis like it's OxyContin or worse. I think we went from the plutonium model to the OxyContin model, and even the alcohol model is not good enough for cannabis. We need the cannabis model, and it hasn't been done yet. That said, there's a lot of, well, there's division in our community like I've never seen in my life. There are people that despise me because I didn't vote for I-502 or didn't support it. Now there's people that despise me because people are saying that I was behind it. I've never seen the vitriol like this before. And unfortunately, it's a part of the process of democracy. There's a lot of uninformed people that want to make this about personalities rather than issues. They want to blame people. They want to point fingers. They want to create hate. They want villains. And I think that that's a massive mistake because this community was kumbaya for 35, 40 years, all totally in harmony, not because we agreed on the implementation of the fine points of legalization, because it was so damn far down the road it seemed irrelevant. And now that we're doing it, we're being divided, and that's a mistake. We need to come back together and respect ourselves, respect the differences of an opinion, the differences in strategy, the differences in versions of implementation. Now I'll wrap up. Because I think that we made a terrible mistake by allowing ourselves to be divided, because we can only go forth more united in unity, even though we may disagree. And as far as patients go, I think that the focus shouldn't be on who's a villain or who is behind I-502 or against it or anything like that. It needs to be, how are we going to mobilize our legislature to protect patients? Because I think what's happening is the state's looking for money. They're like, we need taxes. And like any large group that has armed people that can enforce things, takes over the black market, right? Even if it was the mob, they eliminate the competition. And I think that's what we're seeing in Washington State.
You just heard Vivian McPeak, director of HempFest, and Keith Straub, founder and chief legal counsel of Normal, speaking on a panel at the 2015 Seattle HempFest. This year's HempFest is August 19th, 20th, and 21st in Seattle, Washington. Information, maps, schedule, and a lot more at their website, hempfest.org. And well, that's all the time we have today. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. We'll be back next week with 30 minutes of news and information about the drug war and this century of lies. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.